Welcome to a special edition of the Brainstorming Basketball Podcast. Here with Harrison Liao, and I don't even know a good adjective to describe you right now. An elated Yosef Nasser.
I'm just brainstorming basketball right now. I'm just brainstorming basketball. I think that with James Harden on the Sixers, the possibilities are endless. We've normalized his greatness. We've nitpicked this man. A six-time first-team All-NBA player, 10-time All-Star. I don't even know if those are specifically correct, but somewhere in that range, top 75 player of all time. We should have had two because Joel is up there. I'm sorry, Shaq made it after his fourth year. Shows Joel some love. I think that for all the pain that Sixers fans have been through, honestly, if I knew that this would be the outcome, I'd wait three more months for the Ben Simmons nonsense. Like, this was just special, guys. This was special to see. James Harden is majestic, man. I don't even know how else to describe it. And I'm happy for Joel. I'm happy for James. He gets to put his critics he's going to have an opportunity to silence his critics, put the final stamp on his legacy. I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, and I know that, you know, there's probably a possibility that either someone's going to get hurt or someone's going to have a massive playoff meltdown. But let me enjoy this moment. Let me enjoy this moment. We've been through so much pain, Buckets. Markelle Fultz, Zaire Smith, Ben Simmons, Andrew Bynum. Take it back.
Brian Colangelo.
Brian Colangelo with his long-ass collars. Allen Iverson, you can take it back to those days where they gave him overpaid role players and they couldn't build a team around him. Take it back to then, and now we have James Harden and Joel Embiid. I didn't get to see the whole game like you guys did. I got to catch some of it. We get the Minnesota Timberwolves here in Nebraska. I got to catch some of it during my break. I've gotten up to speed with the highlights, and I'm just in awe with what this team can do. I know the Minnesota Timberwolves are a mediocre basketball team. I know that the Sixers are going to be tested by teams down the road, but oh my gosh, this is so exciting, man. So excited. I'm so happy for Joel, man. That guy's a champion. He deserves a player, a teammate like James Harden. And by the way, he was taking shots at Ben Simmons in his post-game interview, talking about the most space I've ever had. And this is unlike anything he's ever experienced. And good for him, man. Good for him.
That was incredible. I mean, that, wow. Not only the performance by the Sixers, that was an incredible Yosef Nasser performance right there. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, watching them play, it looked as if Harden and Embiid had played together for at least a season or two before. The chemistry looked like it was like intact, and then you combine that with the fact that Tyrese Maxey was going nuts. Dang. This Sixers team, they are as legitimate as anybody in the Eastern Conference, if not more legitimate. I don't know if there is a more legitimate team. Harry, do you think that, what did you think about the Sixers, and do you think that they are the favorites in the East right now?
The ball movement was amazing. I mean, like, it was pinging around the perimeter. You know what's cool about this team? And this is one of those things, though, that might become like a bit of a – I'm not nitpicking. I'm just wondering how this is going to turn out. But they have two modes that they can toggle on offense, though. They have, like, insane ball movement where maybe Joel is down low and he's sucking guys in, which, like, allows that swing pass to the corner to be, like, a little bit of a better shot. And then they have the other way, which is, like, Joel's on the perimeter. He's kind of trailing the guy that's bringing the ball up. And they're kind of these two different styles of offense where, like, one is super downhill and the other is more of like a half-court style where the ball is swinging around the perimeter, if that makes sense. So I'm wondering how they're going to, like, juggle that. Like, when do you kind of go, okay, that thing's not working, let's do the other thing? But I think the early returns are insane. I mean, it's been one game, but I was like, I might have to hedge in my Celtics pick.
There's so many pieces to this that are really incredible. I think one thing that comes to mind is that people question, okay, Joel Embiid is not your traditional vertical spacer. He's not a guy who's going to roll hard to the rim like a Rudy Gobert or DeAndre Ayton. But the thing that's interesting about him is that he has such a gravitational pull. Even if he's like going at half speed, he's got terrific hands and he's such a massive target. So if you try to trap James, you know, has the touch to get it to Joel, who again is a massive target, and the help defender is going to have no chance against Joel in a matchup in a situation where Joel is used to cleaning anyway. So there's that aspect. There's the fact that James Harden hit like four ridiculous step backs that just weren't an option for us offensively. The fact that he can get to the rim and get free throws when the offense is stagnant, completely ridiculous, just incomprehensible. And then the Tyrese Maxey aspect of this, to where, like, if this guy has a sliver of open space, he's getting right to the rim. There were so many instances, and I wish I could, like, pull up the film right now because they're all blending together in my head. But, like, semi-transition. James has the ball, kicks it to Tyrese. Tyrese explodes to the bucket. Joel is pointing to Tobias in the right corner. Tyrese draws the help defender, and he, you know, instead of kicking it to Tobias, he's got the craft around the rim to just float it up and over him because his floater package is that crazy. His finishing package is that crazy. Another one where I think – I can't remember if it was James or Joel who's got it at the top of the key. I think it was James. Tyrese is in the right corner. D'Angelo – Towns is on James. D'Angelo is looking at James, giving attention. And James able to get a quick pass to Tyrese in the corner. Tyrese explodes to the basket, another finish. Tyrese, Harry, we were talking about this in the group chat. The fact that he fits in so seamlessly as a combo guard who's not necessarily, you know, a knockdown shooter, but it's just seamless. His ability to cut, his ability
defenses respect that step back though. Like, he gets a lot of attention with his shot, even if the numbers aren't, like, you're right. Like, he's not like a knockdown guy, but when he's out there, defenses are like defending it. You know what I mean? Which I think is even more important than like hitting a high percentage of them.
And the crazy thing is that Tobias Harris didn't even have a good game. Imagine when he does have a good game. Like, the ceiling of this team, we didn't even see it tonight. And they haven't even figured out really how the bench is going to be coinciding with the stars. There's still a lot of discovery with this Sixers team. What I love is what you said, Yosef, about Embiid's gravitational pull when he's rolling, because that was on full display. I mean, every time Harden would get a screen, I don't know what you do with it. I personally don't know, because the double teaming is not going to be effective, as you mentioned.
They tried trapping. They tried zone.
Yeah.
There was a lot of like panic. There was a lot of panic possessions for Minnesota where like Embiid would seal either like Vanderbilt, who had no chance. He would seal someone early in the clock, like 5-6 feet out from the basket. And I mean, I'm sure that's on the scouting report. You're like, you can't let Joel, you have to make him work to get position. But like, it's over. He's 7'2" and he's 310 pounds and he knows exactly where to be. He early seals, and then the double comes because it's a panic thing. People are trying to front so that you can't catch the ball. And then there's somebody open on the perimeter. It's just unstoppable.
He is literally, is he the best player in basketball right now? Because the things that he does, when you compare it to Giannis, we saw it right before the All-Star break in the head-to-head. You can't put so much stock in a head-to-head, but you have to consider the finals of last year still. But what Embiid is doing right now, all the little things that we mentioned that is not even on the stat sheet, the impact, the gravitational pull, as you said, Yost, I mean, there is so many factors to it. Do you think, Yost, that he is the best player on the planet right now?
I really do, and I think the thing that's transformed his game is that having Ben Simmons around helped him in an ironic way, because Joel would always say, you know, during the Ben era, where it's like, Ben has to be able to shoot to open the floor up for me, just like I'm doing for him. And so over the course of time, you know, we talk about the gravitational pull, you know, I was referring to him going to the rim, but, you know, even like when he's spacing out, he had a three-point shot that James fed him on where he was several feet behind the three-point line. That jumper is cash right now. Yeah. From the midi,
yeah,
from the three-point line. It's his shooting touch is ridiculous. And I think he is the best player in the league.
I think he has the most tools of any player in the world. There's nobody who has more resources available to them than Joel Embiid. Like, he has everything, the size, the quickness, the shooting, the handle, you know, rebounding, defense.
Oh, and speaking of which, by the way, he completely is in a different stratosphere than Karl Anthony Towns.
It's not close.
I mean, it probably was definitely not close before tonight, but tonight just put a stamp on it.
You know what? Towns wanted it so bad too.
He did. And the Sixers announcers mentioned in the fourth quarter, they were like, Towns is trying to – they insinuated that Towns was trying to stat pad towards the end to make the head-to-head look better in his favor. That's what they insinuated. And the thing is, it was not close. Embiid just dominated that matchup from start to finish.
It's too weak. It's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of discussion about the fit between these two players. And I think that sometimes in these conversations, fit gets overrated. Obviously, my take on that was incorrect with the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid thing. That didn't work, but a piece of that is just Ben Simmons not taking those steps in terms of improving his game as a free throw shooter or just a perimeter shooter or just a shooter at all, somebody who would attempt those shots. But it's like playing with Joel like made me think like, see how special James is and vice versa. Playing with James made you see how special Joel is. We know they're both special players, but it just like, it was very pronounced like how well they were playing off of each other. And just to think that they're scratching the surface is scary. We knew that James Harden revolutionized the step back jumper. It's just amazing. Like I said, that concept of having a guy who can get to a step back three late in the shot clock with the swarming arms of Jaden McDaniels all over you. And it's just like, he can make it like clockwork. That was just incomprehensible. And that's all of a sudden an option right now. There was a play early in the game where Tyrese, he was on the left side of the court. I don't know if it was a pick and roll or if he just took his man one-on-one. The like 3.5 defenders were, you know, on the left side of the nail because the Wolves were ignoring James off the ball and they were ignoring Thybulle in the corner. And Thybulle got to his midi and knocked it down like it was nothing. Like, I think that Thybulle as a second side playmaker is going to be a huge piece of this team because he's a guy, James is not really a mid-range jump shooter. He's threes, layups, and, you know, getting to the line. Traditionally, he doesn't really shoot a high volume of shots, but Tyrese kind of thrives in that area. Joel thrives in that area. Tobias can operate in that area. I think that we can attack you on really every aspect of the court. And I think the interesting thing that's going to happen in the playoffs is what to do with Thybulle versus Danny Green versus who's going to be that fourth guy or the fifth guy, excuse me. You know that Joel, Tobias, James, and Tyrese are going to be out there. I think that teams are going to dare Thybulle to beat them. Thybulle hit a few threes or hit at least one three.
Who do you want that fifth guy to be, Yos?
I think it's going to be matchup specific. He hit one three, not two threes. I think it's going to be matchup specific, but, you know, the havoc that Thybulle wreaks on the defensive end, you know, is crazy. It's just like everything's rolling on offense and then Thybulle comes up with a steal to get us in transition. It's so exciting. I think that I would – in this stretch of time, Thybulle provides the most upside if he's hitting shots. So I agree with letting him, you know, continue to work with the starters. But, you know, you have to be prepared to, you know, throw a Danny out there or a George out there. They gave Cork some run. Cork was a little bit, you know, shaky this game, you know, a little bit erratic. It's going to be a committee approach. It's going to be a game-to-game thing, kind of like rolling with the hot hand. But, like we're nitpicking. I mean, you can talk about backup center minutes. We can talk about the fifth
starter. We are nitpicking. I think like for me, what the biggest takeaway tonight to like reverse nitpick was have you guys ever seen Harden play this style where everything's semi-transition, everything's downhill, everything's fast? I remember I went to a Rockets Bulls game, like I think like 2 years ago. And it was when Chris Paul was on the team. And, you know, those teams were so the antithesis of what I saw tonight, where it was Harden, like, literally dribbling at the top of the key for 15 seconds, like, between the legs for 15 seconds. The defender staring, like, all right, man, do the thing. And you step back, you know, three, or he'd blow by, get to the rim. I've never seen James Harden play this style, where it was everything, push the ball, push the ball, push the ball.
That's a fascinating point. You know what I think it is? Remember those teams that you're talking about, the Chris Paul teams, that was before we were at Medill. So that was like 3-4 years ago at this stage. Who was the big man? Clint Capella. What happened? Oh, yeah. You know, they traded, you know, obviously they trade Chris Paul for Westbrook. They trade Capella, you know, play PJ Tucker at the five. And I think what you're hitting on is the fact that because of Joel's shooting ability, they have the ability to take a defender out of the paint, which makes James Harden even more unstoppable because he can get by anybody and there's nobody clogging the paint. So once he collapses the defense, he's got shooters all around him. And, you know, they can still get to a Joel in the post in a pick and roll situation if they try to trap Harden. I think Joel helps him access that semi-transition. Yeah, and again, because James is – you highlight some of the outlet passes he was hitting. He's just ridiculous. A brilliant basketball player, and it makes you think, man, like, has he gotten a bad rap because he hasn't been in a great basketball situation? Obviously, Kevin Durant's the best player that he's played with last year and then with OKC, but in Houston, it was the James Harden show. He had those 2 years with Chris Paul, obviously. They went to the Western Conference Finals the first year, but – I think James's greatness, like, I value guys who can carry teams to high 50s, 60s wins. It's the LeBron thing in Cleveland. Like, if you're dragging teams with role players to the playoffs, to the top of your conference, year in, year out, and you're doing it by yourself, like, you're a special player, but it's just because James hasn't had that postseason success. I don't think he's a natural, like, takeover scorer in the clutch, because he doesn't really have that mid-range in his bag, and those are the shots you have to kind of get to because the defenses are taking away everything else. But with this team, like, his greatness is going to shine through because it's about the decision-making. It's about the getting other guys involved. It's about nobody being able to stay in front of him. It's about him being able to get into the paint, the step-back threes. I'm happy that he's got this opportunity to play with a guy like Joel Embiid. And Joel, for all the shit he's taken for, you know, being injury prone, you know, early in his career and not making it past the second round, like, good for him, man. That guy's been a warrior for us. And, you know, he's got his best chance, you know, since the Jimmy Butler year, where can really do something special this year. And I'm just fingers crossed that we can stay healthy, man, because this, what we saw today was special.
So I want to ask both of you, let's start with you, Harry. Right now, when we look at the Sixers, who do you think is – I think I know what the answer is going to be, but who do you think is their biggest threat in the Eastern Conference?
I still do think it's the Celtics. I mean, wow. I just feel like – I mean, the easy answer is Miami. I really think the Celtics have, like, the best defense in the NBA. I think that they have, like, they have, like, five or six of that prototypical NBA – defensive, like, just that prototype, right? Like, you're 6'7", switchy, strong in the post. They have guys that you just cannot hunt for mismatches. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, you know, even like a Grant Williams, who's a stout dude, you know, Nesmith, who's had like a mini resurgence since, you know, he went really cold before the All-Star break. Rob Williams is just a terror on the defensive end. And I just think they play a playoff style basketball right now. Like, they're getting really good reps in. And if the game slows down, like, if you are playing at the pace that the Celtics play at, which is like kind of reminiscent of those 2017, 2018 LeBron Cavs teams where he would just roll the ball up the court, slow everything down and make sure everything was under control. And with what they can do on the defensive end in half court, I think that they could pose problems for anybody, honestly.
The thing is, this Celtics team, if you would have told any of us this a month ago, would any of us have thought that this would be possible? That's why, because of how quickly it all happened, how the narrative flipped, that has me still a little bit skeptical. I want to see like 10 more games of this kind of sample size.
That's fair. Rose,
where are you at with the Celtics?
I understand what Harry is saying. I think they're kind of thin in terms of, like, you know, one injury, this rotation is all of a sudden, you know, dangerously thin. And I guess obviously you talk about switchable wings who can guard or whatever, but it's like, who's dealing with the Sixers speed combo, the speed size combo, like how are they going to deal with that? In my opinion, I'm curious to see that matchup. In terms of your question about who I'm most concerned about. I think that if the Bucks get Brook Lopez back, and he's like a reasonable facsimile of what he had been a year ago, I think the Bucks and the Heat concern me the most from a defensive being able to match up standpoint. The Nets, I've been hard on the Nets, but I am interested to see. I think from an offensive perspective, they can give us some problems. So I'm interested to see what lineups they can get to, just because – and what Ben Simmons looks like. Obviously, I would put the Bucks and the Heat and even the Celtics above them, but they're intriguing in terms of being able to score, because we all know, like, if you're pulling the ball out of the basket every single time, that's tough for your offense, you know, and that puts a lot of pressure that you've got to keep up with the Sixers and what they're doing offensively, and they're scoring in this semi-transition style that Harry's describing, basically at will. It's like a combination, the interaction of offense and defense, and so I think that the Bucks, if they get Lopez back, would be the team that I'd look to as being the most interesting, formidable competitor for us.
Who's your team, Armand?
For the matchup with Philly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be the Bucks, because I'm expecting, and maybe this is the wrong assumption, but I'm expecting Brook Lopez to come back. And I can't think of anybody in the Eastern Conference besides maybe Milwaukee that wouldn't have to double team Joel Embiid.
You don't think Bam Adebayo can do it? Too small?
I don't know how their head-to-head matchups have gone.
Yost, me neither.
Yeah, I'm not sure how Bam fares, but I would assume that he's too small for Embiid. I mean, Embiid, physicality-wise tonight, he was making Towns look ridiculously tiny. And it's like these guys look like they're about the same size just standing next to each other. But Embiid, the height difference, I think, really makes a big difference when he goes against these guys. There's not many teams in the East or in the league that can match up with Joel Embiid one-on-one. So I would go
there's nobody.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody. I would probably go Bucks as the toughest matchup. But I think Miami – with their physicality against Philly, could pose some problems, but I don't think Miami can score like Philly.
Scoring, yeah. It's huge, man.
Although, but the thing is, we've never seen – Miami hasn't been healthy all year, and they're the one seed.
And now, apparently, they're getting Victor Oladipo back in 2 weeks out of nowhere. So it's like, yeah, Harry just rolled his eyes. I mean, we will see, and we don't know what Victor Oladipo – what version of him. But if he's a playmaker, you know, even 20 minutes a game, that's a little bit of a boost there to the Heat.
Are we overlooking Miami? I mean, we all know what the problems are, right? Spacing. When you have PJ Tucker out there, who's playing great. When you have Jimmy Butler out there, Bam Adebayo, Duncan Robinson stinks this year. It's just hard for them to generate any outside presence unless it's Tyler Hero just going crazy.
I think that this is the same problems that we have seen for Miami, as you just mentioned, Harry. And I don't know if they have the roster that it takes offensively to get it done. With that being said, they are mentally probably, I think, as tough as anybody in the league. Yeah. And that is an edge come playoff time, because those intangibles matter, especially in late games, close games. We know, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like in a late game situation for the Brooklyn Nets with Ben Simmons. Like, can you imagine what it would be like if the Nets actually end up playing in Philly and it's like game four and Ben Simmons is like mentally checked out?
And Doc's doing the hack of Simmons.
Exactly. Yeah. Hack of Ben, for sure.
We have so many potentials for so many great narratives. I do want to touch on the Timberwolves side of this really quickly, because we don't get to talk about Minnesota that often. Now, they were in the second night of a back-to-back. I'm a little bit concerned about the slump that Anthony Edwards has been in. And obviously, it's a small sample size, but the inconsistency is starting to show at certain stretches of his career. Obviously, still an extremely young player, and this is to be expected. Has your opinion on Anthony Edwards changed at all, Harry?
Not from a talent perspective. And like you said, he's young. I'm curious if something happened. He went... he went from being extremely aggressive early in the season, right? Almost to his detriment of like just jacking up shots to now, like I watched him the entirety of this game. He was so passive.
Yeah.
He didn't look for his own. He didn't look to create anything on his own at all. It had nothing to do with whether Tybalt was on him, yada, yada. He seemed more dialed in as an on-ball defender, which I give him credit for. But offensively, he was really, really passive. Like, I wonder, and it was dramatic enough that I wonder if something actually, like, happened, like, behind the scenes where they just shifted what he should be doing.
The other thing that stood out to me in this game was the fact that the Sixers decided early on to put Tobias Harris on Karl Anthony Towns. Mm-hmm. And the logic would say that you would just feed Karl Anthony Towns with a mismatch and just go to work. And he couldn't really do that early on. And that is a big sign of things that other teams can do, because now you can put, like, if you're playing Minnesota, what the Sixers were doing was they were kind of hiding Joel Embiid as a rover on Jared Vanderbilt. And that just caused for Embiid to just be, the rim presence was just insane.
Yeah, weak side shot blocking was crazy.
And so if teams can do that to Karl Anthony Towns, does that change your perspective on what Towns is as a playoff performer, Yos?
He's got to be able to punish Tobias Harris in the post, for instance. So if he's not doing that and Anthony Edwards is in the shooting, I mean, over the past four games when he's had this slump, you know, shooting 21%, 8% from 3, 55 from the line. I don't know if it's a confidence thing.
What are his field goal attempts at?
10 a game, so passive as well. So who knows if it's an injury type issue or what it is, but offensively, the past four games and stretch of the season, you're not feeling him the way that you should of a guy of his talent. Obviously, he's super young. He's 20 years old. You know, it's
yeah, but those first 20 games, it looked like nobody could match him athletically. He was just blowing through guys.
So is it a confidence issue, or is it just a shooting slump, or what? Towns has to be able to hold defenses accountable for playing him that way. And, you know, if he can't, then this team's upside is severely capped.
Is it wrong for me to think of this team as the team that gets swept in the first round of the playoffs? Is that too unfair to Minnesota? Do you guys think that's too unfair?
It's realistic. No. I mean, no. Yeah, exactly. They've got to earn that.
Is that a good season for them if they make the first round and then they get swept? Because really quickly, I think that that's going to raise more questions than give them answers for their long-term future. I mean, cool, you made the playoffs, but if you don't win a single game and you get swept, is this really the trio that is going to solve problems for you going forward?
I don't know if it has anything to do with the playoffs.
Oh, sorry, God.
And I want to hear what you have to say on this, Harry, but I think that at this stage, you know, with the West the way that it is, as you're evaluating this team, you have to make the playoffs. You know, you've got to win a play-in game. And if you can – it's so weird to say that losing in the first round is a success. So I don't want to say that. But it's like you have to – organizationally, you have to understand what this team is, who your long-term guys are. Anthony Edwards is only 20, right? So it's like, you know, this team is going to look a lot different when he's 25. And if you're going to move anybody, as well as D'Lo has been playing, you know, I think he'd be the guy, you know, if you can move for, you know, something additional, then maybe you cash in on the season that he's having. But, it would put a sour taste in your mouth if they got swept. Hopefully, you know, they can take a team to six. But we'll see. I mean, the teams that they'd be going up against, Golden State, Memphis, maybe, you know, those are teams that have the capacity to sweep them if they were to make it into the playoffs. So you want to get checkpoints so you can evaluate where this roster is and avenues to improve. They've got some good young players on this team, but, you know, Cat's been in the league since 2015 with, you know, one playoff appearance to his name, one playoff win to his name. So, you want to see them make strides, and I think making the playoffs is a big piece of that.
I think checkpoints is a great way to, like, frame it, because I almost think there's something wrong with, like, people media members, people from the outside, like judging, like equating playoff performances or appearances or success to the viability of that like core group of players as like an ongoing.
It's like, insane, project. Man. There's so many good players in the league, like going head to head, and there are factors that are out of some of these guys' control. Like Kevin Garnett didn't make it out of the first round, you know, for the first 6-7 playoff appearances of his career. It's kind of crazy, and the league's as strong as it's been. So it's like we hold this against Karl Towns and like maybe he's just the second or third best player on a team, and the Wolves have to get to a place where they can add more talent around him. It's weird.
Yeah, if I'm looking at that kind of from like a team building perspective, kind of like what you're asking, Armand, like if you're looking at this team moving forward, is a first round playoff sweep a failure or success? Like you kind of got to ask yourself, what does it mean to make a deep playoff run? Is it about, you know, the strength of the conference? Like last year's Atlanta appearance in the Eastern Conference Finals, does that mean if you're Schlenk, is he still the guy there? Trevor Schlenk? Yeah. If you're Schlenk, does that mean, okay, for sure, this is the group. Collins, Trey Young.
That's Bogey, what he thought.
That's what they thought. Yeah. But I think, hold on. So I think that, you know, now that's obviously seriously in doubt, in question. Mm-hmm. If I'm looking at the Timberwolves, I would rather look at it, whether they make the playoffs and get swept or whether they push somebody to six or whether they even make the second round and then lose or whatever happens. Short of winning a championship, I would just focus on what's going on the court. Does it make sense? Anthony Edwards, D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns, do they complement each other and like bring the best out of each other in the way that we talked about the Sixers, you know, spend one game, but the way that Harden and Embiid and Maxey seem to amplify each other? And to me right now, the answer is no. D'Lo's having a great season. To me, he's having his best all-around season he's had in the NBA. I know he went crazy that first year with the Nets. I think Edwards has shown really brilliant flashes. I think Towns has shown flashes this season too, despite just getting run over tonight. But do they make sense together? I think we should separate the whole playoff first round exit thing. I really believe short of winning a championship, that should not be a barometer from a team building perspective of like, yeah, this is what works moving forward, or this is what doesn't work moving forward. Because like you said, Yost, a lot of that stuff is out of players' control.
Are you guys a fan of the Jared Vanderbilt experience?
I like him.
Okay.
Yeah, I like him too. I remember when he was on the Windy City Bulls coming down from Denver, man. It's like, this guy's got a chance, man. He's got a nice handle.
He's long.
He can pass it, switchable. You know, there was a situation, you know, smart cutter situation early in this game where I think Harden wanted to switch and Joel was like expecting to kind of stay with his man. And, you know, he was able to exploit that for an easy cut. But, you know, I do think maybe buckets, what you might be alluding to is that is Jared Vanderbilt as your starting power forward stretched a little bit for what he is. And so, but if that's the case, like, what are you going to do? You're not going to give him away. Still keep him on your roster and try to fortify that position another way. Like, you know, if you're looking at the salary structure of this team, you know, right now Malik Beasley making $14 million, Pat Bev making $14 million. I think when you look at this team, based on the way that I think all of us feel about Karl-Anthony Towns, good center, not, you know, that next level center, the Timberwolves' access to whatever their upside is, I think it's in the untapped potential of Anthony Edwards and maximizing what he can be and understanding what are the issues, whether it's a blip or whether it's indicative of a longer-term concern of this slump that he's going into. How do you get that guy to be your go-to guy? How good can he be? And more so than, you know, overstating what, you know, whether it's a playoff exit in four, a sweep, or making it to the next round, it should be about who's our best guy, how are we optimizing what that guy can do, just like, you know, the Grizzlies with Ja Morant. Like, everything is centered around them, and they've done a terrific job of finding complementary pieces, winning on the margins, like we like to say, and making that roster better and deeper every single year. So in a situation where it is a weak year in the Western Conference this year or the Eastern Conference last year, you're in a position to potentially capitalize and make a deep run and potentially a run that your fan base will never forget. You never know in the NBA.
At the end of the day, not everybody can draft a Joel Embiid. you know, sometimes you can call Anthony Towns instead, which is fine. Like, if you look at this year's class with the Evan Mobley, Cade, Jalen Green, you know, whoever else you want to throw in that tier.
Kuminga, Giddy.
Yeah, yeah. Whoever else you want to throw in that tier. There's going to be, like, 3 or 4 years from now, there's going to be a gap between somebody who's on closer to the Joel Embiid level and somebody who's closer to that Karl Anthony Towns level. And they're both going to be very good players. So, I mean, if you're – like, we can't always just rush to be, like, the T-Wolves blow it up or, like, you know, this isn't working, blah, blah, blah. You know, or, like, hey, if you get swept in the first round, like, this is, like, a total disaster. Because, like, it's just not going to happen for every NBA franchise out there. Like you said, you just kind of have to optimize, like, what you have and see, okay, who should we be building around? Like, what's the direction we should be going in?
Like, do we look at the Chicago Bulls after years of misery, after trading away Jimmy Butler? Do we look at what they're doing this year as a failure, regardless of what happens, whether they lose in the first round or whether they make it a run to the Eastern Conference Finals? Do we look at their season as a failure because, you know, if you're not first, you're last. If you're stuck in the middle, that's the worst place to be. All of that rhetoric that we hear. Or do we look at it as a fun, rewarding season for fans? And we got to see Debo's greatness.
Can I jump in on this really quick? Yes, it's a failure. I don't want to see.
Buckets, we watched Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter. I was in those arenas, Buckets. It's a failure
because Kobe White can't get off the bench.
It's cool. It's a great story. If we lose in the first round and that's all it was for, it is, to me, it's a failure. It was a great, fun time when it happened. But to me, that's like, yeah, I would be very dejected. I wanted to touch up really quickly on one last topic. The RJ Barrett performance tonight, because yes, unfortunately, I am rooting for the Knicks to make the 10 seed, by the way.
You're rooting for everyone to make the 10 seed. You were telling Evan earlier that you wanted the Wizards to make the 10 seed.
Well, technically, I want the Knicks and the Wizards to make it and the Hawks and the Hornets to get out of there. But that's a different story. But RJ Barrett tonight, what a performance. I wanted to touch up on that and the Quentin Grimes stuff. And also on the broadcast, I think they were mentioning a little bit of the fact that Tibbs is refusing to play the young guys still. I want all your thoughts on that. Harrison, go ahead.
Quentin Grimes, I wish him nothing but the best. He is my favorite New York Knick right now. Looks like he had a serious knee injury. They said he dislocated his knee, his patella or something. And he tweeted out, he said everything's fine. So, you know, hope to see him back sometime. I'm assuming sometime next season. It took Quentin Grimes to get a season-ending injury for Cam Reddish to play more than 10 minutes. Look, man, the writing's on the wall. I don't think Tibbs wants to be here anymore. I really think that this guy, Thibodeau needs to win basketball games to be a happy person. That's just the truth. And as soon as the season got off to the way it got off, I think he was like, not like mentally checked out, but he's frustrated and he's like kind of showing management. He's like, I'm not going to stand for whatever is going on here. You want to trade for Cam Reddish? Fine. I'm not playing him. You want to draft Miles McBride? Cool. He's going to play 2 minutes tonight. You know, I don't know what's going on. But what I do know is that RJ Barrett has taken it on himself this season to raise his ceiling through, you know, a buzzword that we all want to talk about in sports, which is adversity. I mean, this has been a nightmare, awful season for the Knicks. And RJ has kind of seen through the noise and the smoke and said, okay, like I need to be on track and I need to prove that I'm a winning basketball player. And tonight, you know, 30 points in the first half, he finished with 41, showed like a much more decisive player out there, showed, you know, tools to his game that we actually really haven't seen before, like a much cleaner step back three. I mean, Jimmy Butler said it after the game. This is a guy that I've been comparing him to for a long time, at least his ceiling as a player. Jimmy said, that guy's going to be the face of the franchise, you know. And so to hear somebody like that say that, I mean, I'm very hopeful for Rowan.
I did not know about that Jimmy Butler quote. That is some powerful stuff from Jimmy. So we're all assuming, I'm guessing, that Tibbs is not there next season.
Oh, absolutely not.
I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that coming off of last season, the excitement of making a playoff appearance, seeing Madison Square Garden for that one game. I mean, not that one game, but, you know, seeing the Knicks fan base for the one win they had last year and Madison Square Garden for those two games, whatever. For you know, last season, seeing the excitement back in Madison Square Garden, I think the Knicks got high on their own supply and doubled down and, you know, re-signed all of these guys who are mid-level players. And it's just, you look at this roster, how many of these guys are going to be on this team by the time they're good again? So the interesting thing is that for as bad as the Knicks have been largely over the past 20 years, like, you know, and as grim as this situation seems, like, it's actually a fairly healthy situation compared to where they've been when they have had, like, no draft picks and, you know, completely capped out. Like, they've got movable deals. You know, RJ Barrett is a young player with promise. He actually had 46 points and he missed 8 free throws. So, I mean, you make some of those, like, you know, you're staring at a 50 burger against the top team in the Eastern Conference. You know, they're going to have some flexibility. And I've heard, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, you know, their position to trade for a disgruntled star, whether, who knows if it's a Dame Lillard, if you even want to go that route. I mean, Zion's obviously. Could you imagine, though, like, this year's Zion experience, except, you know, in the Julius Randle spot, still, you know, languishing and being hurt? That'd be so Knicks. It'd be comical. Obviously wishing the best for Zion and hoping to see him on the court at some point ever, you know, in his NBA career, because he was electric last year. But I think Rowan is the one thing that you can kind of hold your hat on. I think you were mentioning it, Harry, the fact that how do you look at the course of these two players' careers and come to the conclusion that paying Evan Fournier is a better option than DeMar DeRozan? Anybody could have had DeMar last year. Anybody, like, you know, people were thinking that he was going to have to take a mid-level deal for whatever reason. And obviously that was wrong. The guy's a terrific basketball player, having the best season of his career. And, you know, the Knicks instead have Fournier.
I can't believe Bing Bong ruined our season, bro. It was all downhill from there.
Literally, can we go down this roster? Like, how many players, like, Nick next year? Let's go 2 years from now. Nick two years from now. Julius Randle.
No.
Mitchell Robinson.
No.
Alec Burks.
No.
Definitely not.
And Fournier.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, no choice.
I mean, they can't trade him, I guess. It's hard to trade him.
He's got 2 years left plus a team option after that. So it's it's not as immovable as you'd think. But, yeah, I get your point. So, yeah. RJ Barrett.
Yes.
Keeper. Jericho Sims.
No. Why not? Yeah, why not?
Obi Toppin. Ain't no stopping. Obi Toppin.
I'll say no. I think he gets moved for that disgruntled star trade.
Quickly, Cam Reddish, McBride.
Reddish, definitely not. Quickly, I'll say yes. McBride, I'll say yes.
And so Quentin Grimes, Quickly.
Did you say Grimes?
No, so I'm at, like, that's the last name on the list. So Quentin Grimes, yes.
For sure.
Quickly, McBride and Barrett, that's kind of your core. And, you know, you've got to figure out the group around it. But as I told Harry, man, like, who knows? Maybe the lottery balls bounce our way and we get Chet in the garden, and all of a sudden, you know, it's the RJ and Chet show.
Jaden
Ivey is a dog. I'm with you.
Why can't we keep Jericho Sims as a part of this unit?
I think Jericho Sims is going to have a lovely career as a 10-year backup, and, you know, he's going to throw an exciting poster dunk once a month, whether it's on the Knicks or, you know, in China. We'll see.
I have a random question for you guys before we get out of here. When we look at the NBA as it stands right now, forget records, forget what has happened, just teams that are playing on a nightly basis, who do you guys think is the worst team in the NBA? And if you need a second to think about it, let me know, because I have.
Can I hear your answer?
Yes. I think isn't it Portland? I mean, besides Simons and Josh Hart, they're starting Drew Eubanks at center right now.
Eubanks he's been good for them recently.
I love it. I love it. Their bench is like guys that you will have never have heard of. And it's like, what is going on here? And I understand what they're trying to do. It's just when I see them and they're in 10th, it's like, this is crazy. Because if Simons carries them to 10th by himself, That takes him up a notch.
The front office is against him too. I mean, they're trying to tank now.
Yeah, I mean, Nurkic's injury kind of popped out of nowhere, and now I don't know. Do you guys have a different team in mind?
We're talking about this season.
I'm talking about like if every team suited up tonight, who is the worst team in basketball?
I still think it's the Rockets, dude. Like they're so bad. It's not that they don't have talent. Like just none of those guys give a fuck about like playing good basketball. They're just there to get like they're the Harlem Globetrotters of the NBA.
Yos.
I like Harry's Rockets call, and I don't know, man. I like following the rookies. I've been watching a lot of Cade recently. That Pistons roster is pretty stinky, man. That's a bad roster. And, you know, you talk about the Rockets, you know, they lost to the Magic also in this conversation, 119 to 111. So I think that that takes the Magic out of the conversation, squarely puts the Rockets in that group. And don't sleep on the Washington Wizards. I mean, you talked about Portland. I think when you talk about Portland, you talk about, like, their roster right now and kind of what they're doing and how they're going about the season. We're kind of entering that funky period of March where it's like, you know, you could see, you know, Marshawn Brooks come up for a two-way and, you know, average 20 like he did for the Grizzlies, like 5-6.
Can we get Isaiah Thomas some minutes for handing out two-ways?
He's had two shots. He was on the Mavs and the Lakers during the COVID.
Dude, didn't he put up like 15 points in his Lakers debut? Where'd he go?
It was not a good experience.
He's out there, but I mean,
can I ask you guys something about the Wizards really quick? Is Kyle Kuzma considered a star if he gets them into the 10 seed? The numbers he's putting up
has to be
36-8-7 tonight.
This is like a nightly thing, not 36, but the other part is like kind of a nightly thing now, it seems.
He's a very good basketball player. I thought did we cross that threshold yet?
He's
definitely a great basketball player for sure.
His reputation, I think, makes people not want to use the S word when it comes.
Yeah,
he might be the best player on the Wizards.
You might be onto something, and I'll say one more thing since we're on the Wizards topic. Who gave up 157 points to the San Antonio Spurs tonight?
Double
overtime. Yeah. I concluded that caveat. It's a crime that Denny Avdia is not playing on Golden State right now.
Yeah,
it's a crime. It's a crime.
I like that fit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what's going on in DC. I don't know who they're prioritizing to develop. It seems like a mess. And, you know, I don't know where they go from here, from here on. I do know that Porzingis, I think, is going to be back soon. So that's going to make it even more fun. But that's a whole nother rabbit hole. I mean, you guys know that we love to talk about the race to the 10 seed on this podcast.
No, you love to talk about the race to the 10 seed. In fact, you live to talk about the race to the
10
seed.
Can I ask you guys?
I think that if we should rename basketball pod to race to the 10 seed so we can talk about the Sacramento Kings, the Indiana Pacers.
Or like the play-in pod.
Can I ask you guys, though, do you think with the Wizards being a game out, is it at all – like, can they make the play-in?
Of course they can. It's the East and it's the 10 seed. You never know.
Like Yo said, their roster is so bad. It's literally just Kuzma. I don't know.
But like you said, they have a star, capital S.
I mean.
A champion, NBA champion, Kyle Kuzma.
I just think that, you know, at this stage of the season, there are different levels of urgency. And coming off of an Eastern Conference Finals appearance like the Hawks are, you know, you've got to think they're going pedal to the metal, pulling out all the stops to, like, you know, not lose out on the 10 seed to the Wizards. I mean, you look at these teams. I think that the 10 that are in the 10 spots now are going to be the 10. Heat, Bulls, Sixers, Bucks, Cavs, Celts, Raptors, a healthy 5.5 game edge over the Wiz, Nets, Hornets, Hawks. Like, there's no way that – like, they would be an embarrassment. Like, you might have to let everybody go on the Hawks if they lose this 10 seed to the Wizards. I'm sorry.
Speaking of the Wizards, you know, it's been a while since we brought this up, but Armand, our lovely host, looks just like Raul Neto. And it's more and more striking to me every time I turn on a Wizards game. I'm like, dude, what the I thought this guy was in California. What the hell?
The thing is, I don't know, honestly, as much as I love Raul, I don't know how he's a starting point guard right now. And he's been playing really well recently. But it's just like it's like the Sato experience all over again. Like there's always got to be one guy that kind of equates to Tomas Satoransky, who, by the way, I don't think he's in the NBA anymore. So hopefully he finds a new roster soon. As Yo said during the Marshawn Brooks period of the NBA, I hope Sato finds a home.
He's on the Spurs, Buckets. He got moved to the Spurs.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Perfect.
He's unkillable. You cannot kill his career, dude.
Exactly.
In that case, we have a new favorite in the race for the 10th.
Played 9 minutes today, Buckets. 9 minutes for the Spurs. 3 points, 1 rebound, 0 assists, 3 for 4 from the line in 9 minutes.
Wow.
Plus 3.
DeJounte who? Come on, man. DeJounte had a trouble.
He can help a contender, Buckets.
I hope so.
Hopefully it's the Bulls.
Okay. He takes Kobe's job yet again. Is there anything else that you guys want to hit on before we get out of here?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Sixers!
Love Let's that. Go.
Trust the process, fear the beard.
All right. Until next time, we are out of here.
See ya.